The rich yellows, oranges, and reds of fall are dominant in the landscape right now. But it's time to start thinking about the pinks, purples, yellows, and whites of spring. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University horticulturist Cindy Haynes and Denny Schrock will be here. We'll talk about planning your spring flower garden and planting bulbs. Cindy and Denny are also ready and willing to answer your questions about the plants in your life. Give us a call at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and although fall color is vibrant and strong right now, today we're going to start off by talking about the colors of spring. But before we get to that, I do want to take just a moment. As I'm sure you know, we wrapped up our fall membership drive this morning at 9 o'clock. Last time I looked at the numbers, and they're still ticking upward, we had almost 3,100 contributions in the last week. Thank you so much if you were a part of this effort. Thank you if you are a member of Iowa Public Radio. It's been a tremendous week, and thank you for all you do to keep Iowa Public Radio strong and growing into the future. If you missed your chance, don't worry. You can still contribute to Iowa Public Radio. Go to our website, iowapublicradio.org, and we're keeping the phones open throughout the day, so you still can call 800-971-8815. And now on to plants. With me in the studio is Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And also Denny Schrock, Lecturer and Coordinator of the Master Gardener Program at Iowa State University. Hello, Denny.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And it's time to talk fall bulbs. This is really the ideal time to think about them, right?
This is the perfect time to think about planting. We actually have the perfect weather. So if you have the location and you're willing to select a few things, this is the time to think spring by planting a few of those bulbs this fall.
All right. Explain for me how this works. I mean, we're talking about tulips and daffodils. And what are some of the other fall bulbs?
There's alliums or ornamental onions. There's crocus. There's hyacinths. There's snowflake, snowdrop. There's kynodoxa, which is called glory of the snow.
Pushkinia.
There's lots
Scylla,
of. Yeah. Oh,
a lot of them.
Yeah. Siberian squill's a great one. Yeah, there's a lot of really wonderful
We tend
things.
To call those minor bulbs, but you don't dare do that in the Netherlands because to the Dutch, they're all major, but they're
right.
smaller in size.
All right.
So you got some big things and you got some little things. So you could really, you know, mix it up a little bit besides just tulips and daffodils.
And why do we plant them in the fall?
We plant them in the fall so that they can establish a pretty good root system and they get kind of established in that site. And then they need a winter or a dormant period. So we plant them in the fall to assure that they get that bit of a dormancy and then our cool period. And then they emerge in spring when time is right.
All right. So if this is the ideal time to plant them, what do these bulbs do? You mentioned that they need a root system. So what makes this ideal and what do they do once we put them in the ground?
Mainly the thing that they're going to do is just start to establish a root system, just a bit of a root system. They're going to absorb a little bit of water. And then when the spring and snow, the snow melts and the spring rains kind of come and the temperature's warm in the soil, they're absorbing a lot of that moisture. And then that shoot or leaf and flower that's sitting inside the bulb says, okay, it's time to emerge and off we go.
How long do they need to establish that root system before it gets really cold?
We usually say you can plant bulbs until the ground freezes. But October's the ideal month because they give a good month of establishing a root system before the ground freezes. So you usually get really good bloom that way.
All right. Now, we talked about all the many different kinds of bulbs. Do you have a favorite way to look at all your options? I think a lot of us think tulips, daffodils, hyacinth, and don't go much beyond that. How do you explore your options?
Well, as horticulturists, we tend to be plant collectors, and so we're often looking at some of the more unusual ones. And there's certainly nothing wrong with going with the standard tulips and daffodils, but it's always a good idea to take a look at some of those that are a little bit more unusual. And even among the tulips, I would encourage all our listeners to explore the species tulips. They're generally smaller, but they last a lot longer in our landscape. One of the problems with tulips in Iowa is that we don't have that Mediterranean climate that they really like for long-term survival. So they tend to rot away or decline after their first year or two. However, the species tulips tend to perennialize very well and last for many, many years.
All right. And once you've explored all of those options, how do you pick the right places for
them? Right. But I look at the garden. I look at the site. I look at where I'm going to put things. And then I think about, okay, I want things to bloom all through spring. So I might plant a few of the smaller minor bulbs in ground cover that would come up under deciduous trees, and they're really blooming early, like the crocus or the scilla or squill. And then I'll think about, okay, in the areas I really want impact, I might think about those tulips and daffodils and hyacinths that are really big. Or if I want to attract a lot of attention, I might think of a crown imperial in one or two spots. So I'll look at all the different spots in my landscape and think about bulbs as, you know, groupings of bulbs, different bulbs that bloom throughout.
Denny, you wanted to add something.
One of the things that I think a lot of people don't think about is placement of the bulb for extending the season. If you plant your really early spring blooming bulbs in warm pockets, like right next to a south-facing wall, you can gain a couple weeks of earlier bloom and then put the later blooming ones in sort of a semi-shady spot that will slow their bloom. So you can kind of extend spring by a full month by doing that.
Nice. I hadn't thought of that. Once you've picked those locations, when I visit Iowa State University's campus in the springtime and I see these gorgeous beds of tulips, or if I go to Pella and I see those gorgeous beds of tulips, now that's a bit ambitious for someone like me to think about trying to really create a bulb garden. Do you have some recommendations for, okay, I'm not going to be out there weeding my bulbs all the time. I'm not going to have a perfectly manicured garden. Right. How do you make it look nice and put it in your lawn and make it fairly low maintenance?
Right. One of the things that I think about in bulbs is pairing those bulbs up with in a perennial bed where I might have something that's blooming in late summer or fall. So I'll put daffodils around some of those ornamental grasses because then the daffodils are blooming first. And then when the grasses really get going in May or June, they're going to cover up that bulb foliage so I don't have to do anything. So think about, you know, pairing those bulbs with what else is in your landscape already so that you can limit the maintenance. And then think about bulbs in groupings so that you have, you know, this one spot that you're going to go to. There might be 20, 30 bulbs there. There might be 50 or 60 crocus over here so that your maintenance is all in one spot, kind of taken care of pretty quickly.
Well, and I know some people, and it looks beautiful, some people really enjoy the sort of naturalized look of having a little clump of daffodils over here and a little clump of tulips there. That does create some mowing problems later on, right?
Yeah, but bulbs in the lawn are something you really need to think about and you know, really reconsider, I think. Because you do need to wait on bulbs to remove that foliage until it yellows. So sometimes the really early blooming bulbs like crocus you can get away with and if you're going to mow that area a little bit later. But putting bulbs in flower beds or where you would put annuals or underneath trees or shrubs where there isn't maybe as much lawn is usually a little more effective.
All right.
So and then it's easier. So.
Right. The shady spots are often a problem for lawn anyway, so it's a great spot to do those Siberian squill or some of those early, like this cover of blue in the springtime. I'm sure you've seen them around places. They really are spectacular in the springtime. And then you might have a ground cover that fills in the area later on, but they self-seed and spread and really do look gorgeous as a naturalized area there. And because they're under a deciduous tree, they're still getting enough sunlight. And then when they die down, the leaves come out and it's shady. So you can do other shade tolerant annuals in there later on too.
Right. I know on the Iowa State campus, we have thousands of Siberian squill blooming in the lawn on a slope. But the slope is one of the last things to be mowed in the spring. So the squill kind of have the slope for the spring, and then they come back and mow it.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now we've selected our bulbs, we've selected our sites. Give me some planting tips. I have one of those things that you buy at the nursery.
A bulb planter. A hand planter, and there's ones that you can step on as well. I think the biggest key with bulbs is the depth. So think about 2 to 3 times the well, I'll say the smaller bulbs usually need to be about 3 inches deep. The larger bulbs, like hyacinths, tulips, you need to be about 6 to 8 inches deep. And most of those bulb planters will actually have a guide that will tell you the depth. And then when you read any of the materials about the bulbs, they'll tell you a planting depth. So depth is important, that they be at about the right depth.
All right. And Danny, I know you're a fan of a different method. Tell me about your method.
That's right. I love what I call the graveyard planting technique. I tend to do things in big scale, big style anyway, but rather than spending my time individually planting each bulb, I will dig a trench that's large enough to accommodate the entire planting that I'm going to do. So it looks
a tulip grave.
A tulip grave. So yes, and it's really easy then to dig it, you know, 6-8 inches deep, get all the soil out, spread your bulbs out in the bottom, and throw the soil back on. And in my experience, I can plant 10 times as many bulbs in the same amount of time that way as doing an individual planting.
And then he has enough time to come and help us plant our bulbs.
What about spacing if you're doing it that way? How do you make sure that you're not planting them too close together?
That's what you just make the grave site large enough that you can space them out. And I can easily either do it very naturalized by just kind of throwing them in and let them land where they may, or if I'm a little bit OCD, I can actually measure and say every 4 inches, every 6 inches, I'm placing a bulb in the bottom of that before putting the soil back on.
All right. Now, once you get the soil back on, do you need to water?
No, usually you don't. Bulbs usually kind of establish and maintain on their own. In super dry years, like last year, we were recommending maybe watering once. But I think we've had enough this year that we'll probably be okay.
There may be some sites in Iowa where it might be helpful you can tell if you're digging and the soil is crumbly and falling apart, it probably would be a good idea to water in afterwards, just because those bulbs then will perceive the moisture and begin their root growth. But if you've got good workable soil that's crumbling apart naturally without powderiness, right, then you probably don't need to water.
And the squirrels have mentioned to me that some bulbs are delicious.
Oh, so. They talk to you too.
Right.
Yes, there are.
What do you do to protect your bulbs?
Sometimes I will plant another bulb that isn't attractive to them, or a grouping of different bulbs to kind of prevent, or hopefully prevent them from digging them up. Other people will actually use chicken wire. So they might plant their bulbs in the kind of, this is where the graveyard technique works really well. They'll, you know, cover up with a little bit of soil, then put chicken wire on top, and then cover with more soil. The foliage and the flowers will come up through that chicken wire, but then the squirrels, when they're digging, will find chicken wire before they find your bulbs.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. My guests are Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Denny Schrock, Lecturer and Coordinator of the Master Gardener Program at Iowa State University. And of course, they are here to answer your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me in the studio are Cindy Haynes. She is Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And Denny Schrock, Lecturer and Coordinator of the Master Gardener Program at Iowa State University. And they are here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. And, of course, you can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. The number again, 866-780-9100. And first we're going to do an email question here. I'm having a few technical difficulties here with my computer. We'll take this question from Jill first. Should I continue to do some deep watering of my trees? None have been in my yard for more than 8 years, and I planted the newest one a year ago. Because of the drought this summer, I watered each of my trees late in the summer. Should I continue to water them? If so, how often and how much?
It's always a good idea to water trees going into the fall freeze-up. Particularly conifers or evergreens are very susceptible to winter browning if they don't have a good supply of moisture in the soil. But even fairly recently planted deciduous trees can have bark damage and tip dieback if they're suffering drought stress going into the fall. So, yes, do continue to water. The amount to add is to make sure you water the full root zone of the tree. And that can depend on the soil type and the conditions and so on. It's difficult to overwater. That is to say, unless they're actually standing in water, they're probably not going to get too much water as long as you water for a long time and it's not running off. So do it every couple weeks if we don't get any additional moisture or rain.
Mm-hmm.
And just make sure it's well watered going right in before the ground freezes.
All right. And we were going to talk earlier about, but we talked about fall bulbs so much, we didn't talk about spring flowering bulbs. There are, of course, or not spring flowering bulbs, fall flowering bulbs. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about some of those.
Well, yes, in my yard right now, I have hardy cyclamen that are blooming.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great thing for shady areas that come in at this time of year and add a little splash of color when a lot of things are not showing up in the fall or in the shady site. There's also colchicums and fall crocus that bloom this time of year. And sometimes, like the colchicums, you can plant those a little bit earlier than now, and they'll actually still bloom this fall.
Mm-hmm.
They're often pushing their growth out when you purchase them, and
right.
You have to be a little cautious while you're planting so you don't break that off. But it's a nice way to get instant gratification from the bulbs that you're planting.
And it's a nice kind of lavender pink color, and they're bigger than the typical crocus blooms. So another one that you want to plant in kind of groups, and they are just fantastic to have. And then there's something else that you can buy that kind of goes in that late summer, early fall bloom time. There are those magic lilies, or Lycora surprise lily, or naked ladies. It's another common name for them that you can buy now. They won't be blooming this year, but they will bloom sometime next year, probably in August into September.
All right. And when you go to the nursery to buy bulbs, how do you know which ones are going to look beautiful in the springtime?
Yeah. With bulbs, the size actually matters. That's one of the few times it actually does. The bigger the bulb, the better. So when you're looking at a group of tulip bulbs or daffodil bulbs, buy the biggest and the largest that you can. And also buy those that look in a nice, good color. You don't see any kind of brown spots or green spots, or there's no soft spots in it. So look for good, firm bulbs. So hand select as many as you can and put into that bag. Some are colored. Some are kind of brown. Some are very weird looking. So just look for the biggest and the largest and the ones that are firm and not discolored, I guess I would say.
All right. And when I go to many different kinds of stores this time mm-hmm. of year, I see nice big bags with really pretty pictures on the mm-hmm. front where I can buy 25 bulbs for this much money. What do you think about those?
If the size is there, yes, they can be a great bargain.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can get real bargains by buying them in quantity. Oftentimes, however, though, the larger quantity sizes, they're a way for the nursery to get rid of their smaller sizes. And you know, if you're just using it for naturalizing, say, a daffodil that can actually increase in size, that may be a fine way to go to get a good bargain. But a few of them, like tulips and hyacinths especially, tend to only decline in size and vigor in our Iowa landscape. So you want to start with the very biggest and best you can for sure on those, because they're never going to get better than the first year.
Right, right.
And if you can't see them, do you think you should take the gamble?
Well, sometimes you can, you know, I can sometimes, even in a bag, I can feel them. So sometimes I'll just do that so I'll have some indication of size and firmness. And then most of the bags, too, have a tendency to be clear with the little holes. So you can actually kind of look on the back and you can see them that way. So, or even, you know, some of the bags, you can ask if they're just the paper bags, if you can open them. They might just be stapled shut at some of the garden centers. Can I open them, take a look at them, and they can staple them back again. So, and most garden centers are perfectly okay with that.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to break character here just a moment, because I've lost my internet connection and I can't reconnect because my computer password is no longer programmed into it. So if Jason can hear me right now, I need him to bring me that password, because I can't take calls until I get that. And since I'm on the road today and I'm in Ames, actually, wait, I just have somehow recovered it, but I can't see any information. So I'm going to go to the phones. Can you hear me? Hello, can you ask your question?
From Ames?
Yes. What's your name?
It's Kay.
Hi, Kay.
And I'm wondering what is the best time of year to trim a sugar maple. We have some branches that are probably a couple inches or a little more hang down, which we've enjoyed, but I think they need to be cut off eventually.
Yeah, pruning trees, generally deciduous trees like a sugar maple, I would tell you not to prune it now because you're probably enjoying some nice fall color. If you can wait until February or March to do some pruning before it, you know, starts to bud out, I think that will be probably your best time to do pruning.
Thank you.
Yeah, just be aware that pruning at that time, you will have sap flow after all sugar maples. That's the time the sap flows. So don't be concerned about that, however. There will be oozing coming from the cut, but that's fine. It won't harm the tree.
It won't harm it at all. And I don't know if you can tap it or make syrup out of it, but but it'll be fine.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. Next up is Bill in Fort Dodge. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
What's
your
question?
Wondering, this year I had some Wajale brushes that really got kind of unruly. So did I harm them by, I took them all the way down about 3 inches off the ground. Are they going to come back? And
When did you do the pruning?
This fall. Yeah, it was probably 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
It's a little bit early for doing that type of pruning. This is actually one of the worst times of year to prune them. Another month from now, it definitely would have been fine after they've lost their foliage. But right now, it may have been early enough that it'll sort of force the dormant buds to begin to grow. And then if we get a hard freeze, it may cause those to die back. Now, if you're lucky, we've got this cool down that's occurred, so it may be cool enough that they won't begin to grow again. And that would be your best bet. So you hope that it stays nice and cold.
Yeah, Wajale is a pretty tough shrub, and it'll probably be okay. What you are going to notice next year is that it will grow and produce lots of shoots. It may not bloom well for you in the spring because those buds were set last summer or this fall. So pruning, you know, this time of year, you eliminated all those flowers, but you controlled the height and you should have a more compact Wajale in the spring.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for your call. Next up is Randy in Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
How you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
Say, I've been selling a pear called Maxine down at the farmer's market in Iowa City, and I had a couple different people wanted to know whether if they bought some pears and dried the seeds and replanted them, would, when the fruit of that tree finally came to pass, would they be exactly as the Maxine pears that I sold them?
Easy, quick answer to that is no. Explain it a little bit, that pears require cross-pollination, so that the pollen that lands on the flowers comes from a different source, and the genetics is not going to be the same. So it may be similar to Maxine, but it's definitely not going to be identical. The only way you can get an identical Maxine pear is to graft it onto another rootstock.
Thank you.
All right, Randy. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next is James in Des Moines. Hi, James.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a pine tree that is encroaching, and I'm wondering when at the lower limbs, they're really sticking out quite a ways. And I'm wondering when I can trim them back to more conform with the outline of the tree.
Springtime is usually the best time to kind of do a little bit of minor pruning on pines if you just want to do a little bit of tip pruning when those candles start to elongate. If you want to actually remove limbs, I would also tell you probably to wait until at least things have started to turn dormant. And you can do that even a little bit later into spring. Just remember with pines and many evergreens, when you remove lower limbs and you go back beyond where they have any kind of needles, they generally don't regenerate any new growth. They don't have the latent buds that we see in some deciduous trees. So it's a forever thing. So if you remove that limb totally, it's going to always be gone.
Okay, I have ewes that are really, I miss trimming them, and they've really gotten limby or leggy.
Right. And yews are the exception to this evergreen rule. They will actually kind of come back even if you do some severe pruning on them. They're a little bit slower than a deciduous tree, but you can do some pruning on them to kind of shape them and take them back beyond the point of where there's any green growth. And if you give it a couple of years, then it will kind of fill in.
I can do that now.
I would once again wait. This is probably the worst time to do any kind of pruning because it may encourage some new growth that may not acclimate for winter. So okay. If you could wait to do that in the dormant season or wait to do that in spring on some of the evergreens or even into summer, you can do some pruning. And a couple of those different times, and with the yew, you might want to think about if you really want to reduce the size, do it two or three times every few months. Starting, say, maybe in November or December, if there's a nice time.
Yeah. Do it in early December and use the trimmings for your holiday decorations. Right. That's a good idea.
Okay. And when is the dormant time for a yew?
Yeah, usually it is in December, January, and February. Most things, even though they're green, they're generally not growing much.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. Next up, let's go to Suzanne in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I planted two apple trees, and one of them was some sort of Golden Delicious-esque tree, mm-hmm. and the other was they called it a Bonnie Best. And then I was afraid that one of them was dying, so I went to an Earl May nursery, and I was investigating getting another kind of Golden Delicious type. And they told me that you can only pollinate a Yellow Delicious with a Red Delicious. So I'd never heard this before, and I wanted to know about pollination and, you know, whether I'm in trouble here. Do I need to plant another tree?
There's perhaps a hint of truth in there that Golden Delicious needs another tree to pollinate it, but it certainly does not need to be Red Delicious. Any other cultivar of apple, so your Bonnie Best that is growing there should pollinate your Golden or whatever Golden type that you grow. Even if you have a crab apple nearby, that's probably right. going to provide the pollen that you would need. So
the only requirement for pollination is that they have the pollen available or that they're flowering at the same time. So, and it's a closely related species. So as long as they're blooming at the same time and there's the bees working one plant to another, you should be good.
Yay!
It's always so good to deliver good news.
It is.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Next up, let's go to Nanette in Keosauqua. Hi, Nanette.
Hey, good morning, y'all.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I've got a customer who purchased a reblooming azalea. Mm-hmm. It says USDA zone 6-9.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in southern Iowa, mm-hmm. and we're not certain if we could plant this outside. I feel like I'm seeing something like this around,
right.
But is it safe?
My parents have these. They love these reblooming azaleas. However, my parents live in Louisiana. So hardiness is going to be an issue with this one. You can try and find a microclimate or a protected location. Zone 6 isn't too far out of your range.
Yeah, but Keokuk is zone 6.
Yes.
So if you live in Keokuk, it's okay.
Right.
Otherwise, it may depend on the winter. But yeah, it's a little bit iffy.
Do you think what about like next to like a stone wall or something?
Yeah, maybe next to a wall or, you know, that southern exposure or an eastern exposure. They tend to be a little more protected. So protected from any kind of northwest winter winds. And then see how it does. If it's a really severe winter, you may even be able to go out there and just kind of cover it with some leaves or burlap or something and really protect it. Because it sets some of those flower buds for spring now. So you'll know next spring, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I think you might be able to get away with it.
Okay. All right. Thank you guys very much.
All right, Nanette. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Katrina. Are you in Ely? Where are you, Katrina?
I'm in Ely.
All right.
A triangle between Mount Vernon and Cedar Rapids and Iowa City. I'm in the middle.
All right. Mm-hmm. What's your question?
We have some peach trees that grew from pits given to us by a woman years ago. She told us to plant them in the fall, let them freeze and crack during the winter. They would sprout. This did happen. We got three little peach trees, which we nurtured over the summer and then planted them in our Fayette soil acreage. They grew quite nicely, steadily. We fenced them against the deer, and about 4 years later started producing peaches, and we now get maybe 150 peaches per tree.
Nice.
And they are very small. We're from North Carolina originally, and so had only seen big Georgia peaches, Albertas, and so forth. And they are not particularly good to look at, these little peaches, but they are intensely peachy, delicious, and they are freestone, and they are white in color on the inside. We continue to share the goodness with friends and get peach pits from them and give them away. And I'm just curious about whether this is, in fact, a native Iowa peach tree, and if so, what the variety might be.
Definitely not a native Iowa. Their peaches don't normally grow well here at all, so you've got a good keeper there if you've got one that's doing well for you.
All right, and we don't really have a guess on variety. Hard to tell.
Hard to tell. Could be maybe you've created your own.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. The number to call to be a part of our conversation is 866-780-9100. I'm here with Cindy Haynes and Denny Schrock. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Denny Schrock, Lecturer and Coordinator of the Master Gardener Program at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll get back to the phones in just a moment. I want to get through a couple email questions. This is from Diane in Bettendorf. We bought several perennials intending to replace our hedge bush in front of our house. Instead, we crowded them into a small area so that we could transplant them later. Is it too late to take out our hedge and transplant these perennials? Can we still plant other plants this fall, one of which is a white birch tree with eastern exposure? Also, when is the best time to plant double knockout rose bushes?
Right. You probably still can do some planting this time. With perennials, I would have liked to have given them a good month of a good reestablishment period before the ground freezes, and I think we might still have that. It all kind of depends on the weather. I would say do it as soon as possible for the perennials. And yes, you can still take out the hedges, and with a deciduous tree, it's probably going to be just fine. It's going to actually continue to grow a root system later than otherwise. So it might be a great weekend to do that if you could get as much done as possible this weekend.
All right, so now, do it
right
now.
Take the Advil now.
Particularly Bettendorf, it's probably going to last a little bit longer of a fall than it would be in Sioux City.
Right.
All right, and for future reference, she asked what is the best time to plant double knockout rose bushes and hydrangeas.
Sometimes the best time to plant those might be in spring, so that they have plenty of time to really establish. But, you know, the last couple of summers have been very dry, so fall's been a good time to plant as well.
All right. And Dennis in northwestern Iowa says, is this a good time to divide my fern leaf peony roots?
Yeah, it's getting a little bit late for that one. That one's a little more tricky. It's a little more delicate. I would have said the best time to do that would have been, say, late August, early September.
So maybe he should wait a year.
If he can wait, that would be great. If he can't wait, do it. It'll probably be just fine. Don't plant it too deeply and really baby it a little bit this fall to make sure that it, you know, overwinters well.
All right.
You want to mulch it in so the ground doesn't freeze quite as quickly.
Right.
All right. And he was asking what the best procedure is if he does embark on this endeavor.
If he does on this, peony roots are very coarse, so you would have to dig the whole thing up and then, you know, find that natural place where it can be divided or sliced in a sense, and then replant one of those plants back in the original location at the same depth as before, and then you have another one to plant somewhere else. Divisions of perennials, especially this time of year, it's kind of late. The bigger the division, the better.
Okay. Patty's on the line next at 866-780-9100 from Des Moines. Hi, Patty. Hi, Patty. Are you there? Well, we'll check in with her and see See if she's still on the line. Our call screener will take care of that. We'll go next to Carl in Boone County. Hi, Carl.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I've got a plug aerator. It's about 4 foot wide. I pull it with the garden tractor, and it's got a hydraulic lift on it. But I need some guidelines about how to use it. Can a guy do that every fall or not quite so often? Anyway, I need some guidelines on the best way to aerate the yard.
Yes, aeration is something that's almost pretty difficult to overdo. So, yes, you can easily can do that every fall. It's a good way to get the root system of the grass to go into the holes that you create and create a more substantial turf. So, yes, go for it. Do it every fall. You can even go over it a couple times every fall.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, Carl. Thanks a lot for your question. And next up, let's go to Teresa in Des Moines. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I need some advice on it's a variety of a snowball bush that I have. Mm-hmm. And summer before last in the drought, a lot of it died. And now it basically just has one branch coming up and some new ones coming up, you know, very low. And I'm wondering, should I just cut that last tall branch down and let everything grow up, or how I should handle that?
Yes, if the shrub is really misshapen and you have just one oddball stem coming up,
it's
probably best to get it all back to the same level. Mm-hmm. And again, the best time to do that would be actually late winter or early spring, just before growth begins.
So hold off.
You'll have to look at it for a while through the winter.
You've got an oddball shrub for a little while.
Oh, it was so beautiful. That fall color in it is just gorgeous. Okay. So hoping to save it.
All right. Okay. Good luck with that, Teresa.
Thank you.
Thanks
Bye.
A lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Is it Freya?
Freya.
Hi. What's your question?
So I'm curious. There's a grass that I see growing all over the area, southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, that when it started to go to seed has these huge, like, beautiful white plumes on them.
The silvery plumes. And it's starting to turn a nice fall color now, too, on the foliage, right?
Yes, exactly. What did you say that's called?
It's a miscanthus. It's a type of miscanthus. Some people call it a pampas grass. The problem with this one is it's a pretty aggressive spreader that we sometimes see in roadsides and ditches. It's really pretty, but it's usually not sold in the nursery. But there are other miscanthus, Miscanthus sinensis, that do have that kind of nice fall color. They also have that nice silvery plume that stay in a clump. So, and this is a good time to go look at some of those at the garden centers to look and see, you know, if there's some that they still have available. But look for those Miscanthus sinensis cultivars.
And is this a good time of year to plant them as well?
It's getting a little bit late. I usually say with ornamental grasses, if you're going to plant them this time of the year, I want bigger ones. You know, get a larger one so that you have a slightly larger root system that you're planting. Sometimes they're on sale, so it makes it worthwhile. Sometimes they're still expensive, and you might want to wait until spring till you can get something a little bit smaller.
Okay,
so
great.
It's up to you.
Thank you.
But you can check out the cultivars at the garden centers to see which ones have those really good fall color and plumes right now.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, Freya. Thank you so much for your call. And again, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Here is a question from Josh in Iowa City. My ash tree recently lost a large limb. The break is pretty ragged, and I'm thinking about cutting the break point evenly. Is this necessary? Is it good for the tree? Should I wait until winter?
Whenever you have storm damage or any type of damage like this, it's a good idea to take care of it immediately. It's the one sort of exception that we say, you know, you should do your pruning in the winter dormant season. But if you've got a damaged limb, it is a good idea to take care of it right away, because that jagged edge is a good entry point for disease and insect problems. So take it back to the next largest branch or main trunk and cut just outside the collar or swollen base of the end of the branch, not flush with the trunk, but close to that trunk.
Okay. And here's another email question. This one is from Dan in West Des Moines. When is the right time to prune lilac bushes? Mine are out of control. He also wants to know how far back he can go.
Oh, okay. Well, you can do, if you really want to take care of and prune it back and, you know, have something a little more vigorous and a little smaller, you can do something called renewal pruning. And we usually do that when it's dormant. And we just come in and take out a third of the canes or the largest stems down to the ground in, say, February or March. Now, that's removing those flowers that you have, but you still have, you know, two-thirds of it left. You do this every year in February and March for 3 years. And then after 3 years, you've got all of your stems are new, vigorous, shorter, little nice kind of stocky things that have a nice new vigor, and you've kind of renewed the plant.
Okay.
And you're not eliminating flowers totally. Now, that's if you're the patient type and you want to take the three-year method. If you're not the patient type, you can actually go probably and, you know, remove all of the canes down to within a foot or 6 inches if it's a well-established lilac, and it will regrow, and then you can select the ones that you want to keep. That means you're not going to have any blooms for a year or two. So, but it's a more instant method, and it sometimes is needed for the frustrated gardener that has too much lilac, you know. So it's up to him. I usually like the three-year method.
All right. And so with the three-year method, you take about a third this year, and then the new ones that grow, you don't touch those, but you touch the older.
Right. You take the largest, older canes a third every year for 3 years, so that after 3 years, there's only new canes or fairly new stems left.
All right. And you've got a few months to wait before doing that.
Right.
Okay. Back to the phones. Chad is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Chad.
Hi. I was just curious, when is the best time or when it's too late to trim some Techne arborvitaes and then some yew bushes?
Right. All of the evergreens, we generally like to, maybe not now. Now's not the good time to do some pruning, but you can do some pruning in the winter period. You can go out there in February and March and do some pruning. Find a nice day in February and March to do some pruning. And then you can also do some more pruning on those evergreens in late spring, like June, May and June, if you want to as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chad. Thanks a lot for your call. And he gets to take the weekend off.
He does.
Molly's on the line next in Story County. Hi, Molly.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question for you. We are needing to plant Aroa shrubs on the south side of our home, and I was wanting to do boxwood that like the deep, rich green, evergreen color, but I've been told that they grow really slow, and I'm a little concerned that the ground may be too dry to plant right now. So those are my two questions.
Yes, boxwoods definitely are slow growers. Mm-hmm. They'd only put on a few inches of growth a year, but that may be a good thing. Oftentimes, your foundation-type shrubs, if you plant them next to the house, they get overgrown very quickly. So it actually might be a good choice that it's better to let them grow a little slower, be a little patient, let them fill in over time, and they're something that can be pruned very readily. Boxwoods can be sheared several times a year, so if they start getting a little too big, you can easily cut them back. As far as planting them, again, we're getting a little bit late in the season because they are evergreen. They need to get their roots established before winter sets in, and if it's terribly dry, it may not be the best time to do it. The ideal time to plant them is a month ago, mid-September.
Okay.
So that would be the ideal time if you want to plan ahead and look for next fall if you can wait that long.
Okay, that sounds good. So not the spring then?
Spring is okay. It's just going to take a little bit more extra care in the watering through the summer, particularly if you're on the south side of the house. The sun will beat there and they'll dry mm-hmm. out faster. So you just have to pay more attention to the watering then.
All right, Molly, thanks a lot for your call. And Paul is up next. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question has the dahlia plant. Mm-hmm. Belonged to my father, and he passed away in December, and belonged to his mother before him, he
oh,
says.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And it supposedly she had this already right before he was born.
Oh, wow.
And he was 87 when he passed away. Anyway,
heirloom dahlia.
Every spring he would plant that, and he takes it in, you know, mm-hmm. when I believe it's before the ground freezes.
Right.
Hard. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it would die.
Right.
And this year I didn't put it out right away because it was so cool, and I thought it had to be warmer before I put it out, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get to put out planted actually till his birthday. It was June 14th. And I've got 6 blooms on there, and there are several more buds that are ready to bloom. But I covered it for the first frost we had here. Now, how long do you think I can let that go yet before I need to cut it off and then bring those in and put them in a a vase with water, right, and see if they'll bloom yet, and then dig the bulbs out underneath the ground there and wrap them in newspaper again like he always did, and then put them in a big box and brought them into the house garage where he wouldn't freeze,
Right. Right. Well, it sounds like you're going through some heroic efforts, and that's wonderful. I would tell you that, yes, I would get some of those buds if at all possible, to at least show a little bit of color, because then you can bring those cut flowers in or those stems in as a cut flower. I'm afraid you may not have a whole lot of time. And then your efforts to protect those stems or those flowers may not be lasting much longer. You might get it, at about 35, 32 degrees temperature, you're going to start to see some damage to some of those flowers. So maybe bring in some of those cut flowers and then wait for frost to kill the top or the foliage. And then that's a good time to tell you when you can dig up the bulb and actually bring that indoors and wrap it in newspaper and do those.
Don't worry too much anymore about having them bloom out there outside.
Right.
Go ahead and bring in what I want and put them in a vase with water or whatever, and then let the frost let it get bit by the frost once then?
Yeah, you can let it get bit by a light frost. That will kill some of the leaves and some of the tops, and that's a good sign to say that, okay, it's time to dig this up, because we usually have some nicer weather right after a hard freeze or a frost.
All right, Paul, thanks so much for your call, and good luck with that. Lynn in Iowa City is wondering, I'm going to plant bulbs in a bed with 2 or 3 inches of mulch. Should I count the mulch as part of the planting depth?
I wouldn't. We usually think of it as a soil depth, not the extra mulch.
All right. And another question from Dorothy. My impatiens were blooming wonderfully until about 6 weeks ago. They stopped blooming when the leaves disappeared. A friend in Connecticut said there's a disease that kills them in her location so that she can't plant them anymore. Is there a problem with them here?
Yes, very much so. It sounds like you have the classic symptoms of downy mildew on impatiens. Mm-hmm. It is a fungal disease that spreads through the air, and it can defoliate impatiens within a couple days. So if yours defoliated that quickly, and it sounds like 6 weeks ago it must have been that, I would recommend not planting your common impatiens anymore. If you really must have impatiens, try the New Guinea impatiens or the sun patiens, which have some New Guinea parentage in them. Those tend to have some resistance to downy mildew, but the regular ones, none of them do anymore.
Mm-mm. All right, and let's squeeze in one last question. John, what's your question?
Yeah, I lost a 150-year-old pignut hickory this year, and to replace that, I was thinking about a maple, but I want something that's going to be a good, strong tree that's going to last another 100 years or something like that, and wonder what kind of I should be looking for.
Right. I would look for, personally, a black maple. A black maple is kind of native to parts of the state. It gives you that nice fall color. It's got big leaves, and it generally does pretty well. There are also some wonderful sugar maples out there. Both of these are hard maples. They're pretty slow growing. That will do well. If you want something a little faster, look for the hybrid maples. But I think in this particular spot, you want some good fall color. Maybe time to research to see if you can find a black maple.
All right, John, thank you so much for your call. And Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Denny Schrock, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been delightful.
Denny Schrock, Lecturer and Coordinator of the Master Gardener Program at Iowa State University. Of course, we will be back on the air with Horticulture Day next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Jason Burns. And you can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News. News.